10:34, the time over the last 20 years, Eric Henderson has performed all over the world. He's one of the great guitarists of our time, and we are fortunate to have him right here, right now. This coming Saturday night, he has a show at Campus Jacks in Newport Beach. Campus Jacks is the former Hoagie Barmichaels. I'll give you information on how to get tickets and how to line that up. Believe me, if there's something you want to do, if there's something you got to do, it's catch this guy live. So do me a favor. His first song for us today will be Moonlight Sonata. This is Eric Henderson.
Thank you. So this next piece is a song I wrote many years ago, probably before they invented electricity. This is called Faces.
That's Eric Henderson. I feel so fortunate to have heard that this morning. We're going to have him in studio for a conversation. He's at Campus Jacks this coming Saturday. We'll talk about that as well and ways for you to get tickets. 10:42 the time on the Midday Show. The time, 12 minutes shy of 11 o'clock, a Thursday edition of the Midday Show. Welcome to the program. So you just heard a couple of beautiful songs from Eric Henderson. He has a show this coming Saturday night at Campus Jacks. Campus Jacks in Newport Beach is the former Hoagie Barmichaels. If you're looking for tickets for that show, you go to NBCampusJacks.com. And if you forget that or whatever, call me here or text me here and I'll be happy to give you that. We welcome this morning for the conversation, Eric Henderson. Welcome.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you for being, first of all, thank you for that. It's always like you feel you want to thank someone for giving you that much beauty this early.
Thank you. It's very generous.
Well, no, you're very generous for coming in with your time. I appreciate that. And again, I think the first question that I had is, how did this guy get so good? You must have a guitar in your hand constantly.
You know, I was looking at a picture in those old Polaroids. They had the dates. You used to have the dates on the back.
Right.
1965.
Okay.
And it was December, you know, it was Christmas, 1965. And that's when I started. That's my first real guitar.
Okay.
Anything I looked at, I thought it was a guitar, a tennis racket, you know, a broom.
Right.
I imagined it was guitar. I was fascinated with the guitar as soon as I could probably crawl.
Did you get lessons? And
I started. My first teacher, I was six, and then I had another teacher. My first teacher taught me kind of a Chet Atkins style.
Okay.
And then second one taught me some jazz, and then we moved from Claremont down to here in Laguna in 67, and I got to study with Antonia Morales, who was a really fine classical and flamenco guitarist, studied with her classical and got turned on to Segovia. And so my influences were Hendrix and Segovia.
Okay. What amazing influences. Yeah. What amazing influences. Tell us about Andreas Segovia and your love.
Well, I first saw him, I think I was, I don't know, 9, 10. My parents and Antonia took me to the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, the Music Center in L.A., and it was amazing. It was such an experience, and you never forget that. You know, we're up in the second balcony, and he comes out. There's no microphone. There's just a chair and a footstool.
Right. Which is what you did here.
Yeah. But I mean, there's no amplification. Okay.
Right.
And this is about a 3,500 seat hall.
Okay.
And it's interesting because at first it sounds a little faint.
Right.
But your ears adjust and it's so quiet.
Right.
And he demanded so much, you know, silence.
Right.
Really. He didn't put up with even coughing. All of a sudden it was like a telescope, audially.
Right.
It became so big for such an intimate instrument, and it sounded like that was the first time I really got a feeling like I was listening to a miniature orchestra with one person doing it, and it blew my mind.
Okay, well, not to blow smoke in your face or anything like that, I felt that coming from across the room over here.
Thank you.
In that there was, the air got still when you started playing. No kidding. The air got still, and it was only you and the guitar.
Thank you.
When you've been playing for a while, you're obviously a magnificent guitarist on your own. Do you have the patience to teach others?
I love teaching.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Right. I think it's important to teach. You know, I was very, very fortunate. When I was 12, I got to play for Segovia. And then he invited me actually to study.
Right.
If I went to Spain, if I came to Madrid.
Right.
And so the next year, at 13, I was in Spain. And I pretty much stayed there for the better part of the next 4 years. But the first couple of years, it was a lot of study with Segovia and his the guy that was behind him as far as his transcriptions and a lot of stuff. But it's a whole nother story. But that was Aurelio Herrero. But I was really fortunate because Segovia was very generous. He was scary,
right.
You know, very stern. And I would practice literally 12 to 14 hours a day. That was,
right.
For those 4 years that I was in Spain. But I got to be, spend time with not only Segovia, but Julian Bream, Parkinane, Angel Romero, Ernesto Pitetti. These were all performers, not
right.
just teachers.
Right.
And one of the things that Segovia told me was, what you owe me is to hand this on. give back.
Pass this on.
Right. And I learn so much when I teach, because I have to have that empathy and go back to how did I figure this out, or how did I solve this? And I love teaching how to learn. Not so much, you know, oh yeah, put your finger here and this is the technique. Yeah, that's important, but it's, I think, mostly a question of
how the student absorbs.
Yeah, and giving them the tools to learn, right. To have a protocol of observation. That means, you know, when they watch another guitarist that they admire, to key in on certain things, not just passively observe, but okay, check their left hand, what are they doing, or check their how they're using their thumb, or, you know, to key into specific things and just focus on that and have an organized approach to observing, and all that stuff. You know, the best teacher for me is failure, right? I've learned more, you know, next to the word mistakes in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of me. So I've learned what not to do and how to solve those problems, and I love teaching that.
Right. And when you mentioned Segovia earlier, you also mentioned Jimi Hendrix, and the question immediately popped into my head, what made him so great? What is it about Jimi Hendrix that, for rock, made him so great?
Well, I think, you know, you had Eric Clapton, Cream.
Right.
And Jeff Beck, you know, and
all magnificent.
By the way, Jeff Beck is really my favorite electric guitar player.
Magnificent.
He's just awesome.
Yeah.
But Hendrix was really, you know, that album Are You Experienced. When I heard that, it was the first time I heard the guitar featured as a virtuoso instrument with the sonic design and texture and colors. Nobody else had, I mean, others, you know, like Jeff Beck, of course, you can't take away from what he was doing with the Yardbirds and other stuff, as well as Jimmy Page. But Hendrix had this incredible arsenal, a palette of colors and textures and sounds that we take for granted today because it's all, you know, pretty much available in a digital way, you know, stomp boxes and effects. And he was doing it, you know, things like slicing a speaker to get
to get sound right,
to get a distortion, or you know, doing it with his touch,
right,
and the whammy bar, and
there was a creativity that now pretty much there isn't room for because there are machines to develop those effects.
You know, that's I've seen people pick up a guitar, and it could be a crappy solid state amp, okay, and their touch transcends the equipment, their vibe, their spirit, and their sheer will to communicate a musical, you know, property. Right. Is so powerful that doesn't really, I mean, it helps, but it's not the primary thing that's going on when you hear something that you immediately recognize, wow, this is authentic, this is, the guy has a great left hand pulse, the touch, and he's got a great feel.
Right.
And then you hear somebody, you know, it could be every pedal under the sun, every effect, you know, available to them, and they don't have that touch, right, and they don't have that feel, and it's not even a tenth as interesting. So it's really, I think it comes down to how you communicate, you know, what you're communicating and the intention you have to communicate. It can't be just fingers, you know.
Right.
Technique.
It has to come from the soul.
It's got. It's we're talking about a language.
Right. It's funny you say that. Earlier this morning, I played Roy Clark's Malagueña. And I thought to myself, well, I immediately started listening to the stuff that you have, that I have from you online. And I thought, well, there's love in the notes that you're playing. There's a feeling, there's a oneness with the guitar.
Yeah.
And I think that, do you agree that that's important to have, that it's that?
I think it's weird, but I feel like my life depends on every note.
I love that.
I want to bleed for every note.
Right.
You know? And to the degree I can be present,
right.
I mean completely present, I can engage the listener.
Right.
As soon as I wander and it's just going through the motions, the listener senses that.
Right.
You know, they might not you know, be able to articulate it. People sense that it's urgent, it means something, it's everything. It means everything. It's your life.
I was sensing that when you were in there, as were our listeners who texted in while you're playing, that this was just amazing and something different for them than they had ever heard before.
Oh.
So, I get exactly what you're saying there. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Eric Henderson. We just had a magnificent live performance in the live room Saturday night. He's at Campus Jack's. I'll give you ticket information on Campus Jack's in a minute. That's the former Hoagie Barmichaels in Newport Beach. So what's after Campus Jack's? What are your plans here this summer?
I'm doing a recording, a new recording. By the way, before I forget, Campus Jack's, Jax is spelled J-A-X.
Yes.
A little shameless plugging there. I just started a new recording of songs, and that's what they are, songs that I've been wanting to record for years. Some of them have been in development and percolating for a number of years. Some are fairly recently conceived, and I'm working with a guy named Curtis Matheson, who I really, really have a great admiration for. He's a good producer, good engineer, and he hears things and brings the arrangements to life. It's really fun. So, and these are songs that, I mean, there's everything from ballad to some hard rock, even stuff I've always wanted to do. And you know, for years I was timid and concerned about what the traditionalists and the purists, so-called, would think.
Right.
And thank God that's changed. It's insufferable.
Yeah, thank you for leaving that in the rearview window, in the rearview mirror there.
I've always had this tug-of-war dichotomy, you know. It's like I've frustrated Jeff Beck or Jimi Hendrix, interpreter. At the same time, I'm studying and practicing and playing professionally classical guitar. And I don't even like that term because it's
classical.
Yeah, it's. I'd rather hear the term concert guitar.
Okay.
Because it encompasses a variety of genres, but also it implies a kind of virtuosity and excellence to the instrument. You know, it's a concert level. It's worthy of somebody paying a ticket to, you know, for their seat, right. Hopefully.
Right. I'm loving this conversation. Yeah. So when you create a piece, like you said, you're putting together pieces that have been in your storage, in your brain for years. When you create a piece, how much of it is structure and how much of it is just soul that you, or, you know, you're.
If it doesn't come from the voice, you know, that inner voice, a melody, if it's not, it can, you know, and a lot of times melody can be inspired by a groove, a rhythmic pattern, a lot of times.
All right.
I'm amazed at a lot of the classical works I've composed were based on a rhythmic design or rhythmic, you know,
a rhythmic foundation.
Yeah,
structure?
Yeah, motif. Right. I guess. But if it doesn't come from a melody,
right,
in my imagination. Not from my hands, not from noodling. Now, sometimes you get lucky and be noodling and you go, oh, that's kind of cool. That's right. Interesting. Or you have some harmonic accident, that beautiful accident that happens. You go, wow, that's nice. And that implies a melody.
Right.
But it has to be based on a melody. So to answer your question, the best way I can, I guess, would be to say it has to come from receiving a melody,
okay,
you know, and then the arrangement works around that, develops. Right.
I've lived in this town over 20 plus years, and I think to myself, and as you were playing there, I was thinking to myself, I would love to have you at one of these locations that we have in town that does regular music on. I would love to see you every Tuesday night, every Thursday, whatever. I'd love to have you in a regular spot here.
Yeah, I'd like that too.
Yeah, let's put that out in the world right now. So I know that we have a lot of club owners and general managers that do booking here in town. This is something we need. This is a form of music. This is a form of art that we absolutely need in this town.
Well, you know, it's funny. I do. In fact, I'm going to be doing a cover of Sting. Hendrix, Stones, Steve Winwood, I don't know, maybe even Mason Williams. It depends on how I feel. But I'm going to be doing some covers, you know, that are my arrangements of those.
Right.
Obviously, I don't sing. It's an eclectic program that I do. I can do whole sets of covers, instrumental versions, and I like doing that. It's a challenge because you want to do the bass line and the vocal melody simultaneously and sound like two people at once. You know, it's been a rough couple of years with COVID I lost my wife September 19th of 2020.
Sorry.
So,
really sorry to hear that.
I'm just starting to come back to the world.
Has her loss prompted any music to write?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But she was such an inspiration. She was brilliant.
Tell us about her a little bit.
She was, I met her, was giving lessons to her son, and she was a graduate at her doctorate from MIT, cognitive science, absolutely brilliant and culturally profound. just an inspiration. I, you know, I felt like I was playing with crayons compared to this woman. And I think the only thing that, well, the only thing I can figure out is she loved the music, and she saw something there, and thank God, because she made my life so much better. We were married for 16 years, and we were together for almost 17, and it was because of her that I started really taking it seriously as far as becoming a composer. I wouldn't dare to consider myself a composer. I'd written a lot of songs and some, you know, minor classical pieces, but
that might be your own modesty talking about not considering yourself a composer. Well, I think others would argue with that.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, you meet some people, if you're lucky in life, you get to be around somebody that makes you better.
Yeah.
You want to arrive to a higher level just so they can stand you.
Yeah.
And so she inspired me to have a much greater work ethic when it came to you know, composition and developing stuff. And I you know, in fairness, I actually went back and studied more counterpoint and arranging, and she was, you know, she helped organize my catalog, and it was transformative. And I miss her horribly, but you know, the best thing I could do now is concentrate on, you know, doing some excellent work the best I can, and honor her and fulfill a certain legacy that she handed me, you know, that sense of excellence and discipline also.
Well, hearing you play, you're definitely honoring her that way. And the look in your eyes as you tell this story, you definitely carry her soul still with you. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us. One final question before I let you go. And this is, again, one of my curiosities, one of my dumb curiosities. When you hear something like Mozart's fourth movement in violin, mm-hmm. can you transfer that to guitar?
Yeah, a lot of times you can. You know, there's only so much you can do because you're limited. It's one instrument.
Right.
But in fact, there's the fourth movement of the Symphony Number 1 by Brahms. I've always wanted to see if I could arrange that for solo guitar. It'd be quite a feat.
I'd love to hear
that.
That's
an amazing theme. I love that it's the fourth movement, the Symphony Number 1 by Brahms. Just beautiful.
Right.
And you can do quite a bit. You know, violin lends itself to guitar. Right. You know, but you don't want it just be monophonic. You don't want just one line. You want an accompaniment or counterpoint or support.
So layers.
Yeah. So you'd probably do the bass line, the, you know, bowed bass or cello part, right, as well, or something that supports it.
Right.
And that's always a chore, but that's absolutely doable.
Right. I got to tell you, this last half hour, 45 minutes, I feel like my day is complete. I absolutely loved having you in. I loved this conversation.
Thank you so much.
I can't wait to get you back. And no kidding, I should give you a key to the front door for whenever you want to come on in. We've been talking to Eric Henderson this morning. If you missed any portion of this, whether it's the live performance or this conversation, we'll put it up on the website a little bit later on this afternoon. Go to kxfmradio.org, pull down the podcast page, and there it is. And I'm strongly suggesting at this point that this coming Saturday night, you go to Campus Jacks with an X. and go to nbcampusjacks.com. Look for tickets there. If you forget that address or whatever, text me here. I'll be happy to give it to you. Eric Henderson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was very nice to talk to you, and I didn't mean to be a motor mouth.
But no. This is exactly what we look for, man. This is the real deal, and I really appreciate you being the real deal, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks. We'll look forward to having you back. 11:15 the time.